It's a Thursday. It's our show. And it's that time to gather to get our view from the north. Proving Thomas Wolfe lied when he said you can't go back home. Again, doing it for the Oregonian, covering the Ducks and Seahawks on Twitter. Try the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress checks in. How we doing this last Thursday of October?
I'm doing pretty well. I've kind of hit one of those like little like uninspired walls where it's like I just don't want to do anything. And I don't know if it's the Bears' offense that's getting to me.
Oof.
Or the upcoming election or what, but I just hit one of those weeks where you're just like, I don't really want to do anything.
I actually, every once in a while, I'm like, I took my first full-time job in 1982. It's enough already. It's enough already. So, speaking of, it's also kind of a lull time. You know, they took sports away from us for almost 3 months, and then you had an inundation where everything started up, and there was basketball in August and September, and it was just crazy. So, what was your level of World Series engagement? Were you watching because it's the series and you work in sports, or did you care either way?
I was watching because it was on. When it's two teams I don't have any kind of vested interest in, I kind of have it on. And then if a game's tight, you know, if it's interesting, then I'll probably watch the last three innings. So that's sort of what I did. I didn't watch all of game 60, and I kind of just watched, you know, I didn't even see what Snell was doing. I just kept hearing, oh, Snell's killing it. Oh, great. Then the next thing I know, he came out and Anderson came and gave him a couple of runs. I'm like, I missed all of that, really, but it was on. I just wasn't paying attention. And then I watched the last couple innings. And my only really level of interest maybe came from the fact that I have a bunch of Bellinger cards. So, you know, him winning a World Series helps those go up.
Wow, that's a nice angle. It's a real diehard baseball angle.
Actually, that night I sold a Corey Seager card for $150 and a Bellinger card for $1,500.
Really? What, it was rookie cards for that much?
It's a graded gem, 2017 chrome orange refractor number /25 autographed card. Not a lot. Remember back in the day, I got an 85 top. Now it's Bowman Chrome Refractor Orange Refractor number /25 autograph. Graded gem.
What you people have done to the young folks from my generation, how we used to collect cards in a pack with gum and trade based on the colored circle, is just devastating.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah, I've talked to you about this, but every single solitary card I have, I collected from 67 to 74, and I've kept them all this time. So there you go.
That's awesome.
And none of them were worth anything. You got a Clay Bellinger that's worth all my crap put together, so thanks. All right. Now that that's settled, to the Seahawks, you know, eventually you straddle the cliff, you're going to fall off. You know, the pass rush has been bleak, but so now they trade for Carlos Dunlap. I mean, we know Irvin went down, so I guess what's the word on how he might help upgrade this thing?
Well, he gives them a clean pass. He's been a Pro Bowler. He's had double-digit sacks before. I think he had 8 or 9 the last two seasons. He's a veteran guy. I think he's 30, 31. He's definitely better against the run than Myola is, so you get a little bit of upgrade there. So I think, you know, I think it's a good addition. I think it's definitely better than what they have. You know, it gives you somebody. He's not going to be, like, I don't think he's going to really change all that much for them. I think he's just another dude, but it doesn't hurt to add somebody. You know, the problem is they don't have really one guy that is a special preparation for the other team. Like, who along there is some guy the other team's worried about? Like, there just isn't one of those guys to put pressure on a defense and make them have to be concerned with them. So you just have a bunch of guys who are all blockable, so it's easy to scheme against. And that just exposes the secondary, which without Adams isn't as good as it is with him. So, yeah, it's an issue. I mean, everyone knew going into the season it was going to be an issue. Losing Clowney, who wasn't you know, he didn't produce a ton of sacks, but he did give you some pressures, and he was a guy teams had to prepare for, right? If you block Clowney one-on-one all day, he's getting sacks, right? So teams had to scheme against him, and so you kind of missed that. I don't blame him for not giving him $15 million that Tennessee gave him, but, you know, I think you miss having that star power, at least in the front seven.
So, maybe
as a pass rusher. You have star power in Wagner, but not as a pass rusher.
Right. Might be oversimplified, but you know Carroll's been a great defensive coach. You know, Norton's been a pretty good coordinator. I mean, even in Oakland, they got better points against all 3 years. They expect to get Adams back. You mentioned Maoa. Both Griffin's, Trey Flowers are all healing, at least. Is there any logic to just, well, at least if they have all their healthy bodies out there with this coaching staff and some of the really good players, that'll offer some improvement?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's possible. I mean, I think, you know, you got to be healthy. That definitely helps things. It's just, you know, if I'm scheming against the Seahawks, you know, I'm not really worried about them getting pressure on my quarterback. And, you know, with the way offenses are today, you know, everyone's got, I mean, even bad teams have someone who's going to, you know, torture you if you can't cover, you know, you're going to face trouble. And the other problem for them, too, and I know Seahawks fans would never want to hear this, is that this whole let Russ cook thing, it's putting the defense out on the field more. And I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form they should stop letting him throw 50 touchdowns, which is what he's going to throw. But it does put your defense behind the eight ball because they're out there a lot. It's a faster-paced game, and it exposes them. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that's the argument for being able to run the ball well, is you can shorten games and keep the other team's offense off the field. They're not doing that. They're just trying to score as many points as possible to make up for the defense. Therefore, you're exposing your defense there. Therefore, you're just going to give up points. There's just no way around it.
Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, let's get to your Bears. I like the side-by-side you posted. The vicious Grizzly as the defense and Yogi and Boo Boo Bear as the offense. Sadly accurate. Somebody said beyond Allen Robinson, you know, where's the talent? So what's the scenario? Give up the play calling for the coach? If Fentress is GM, what's your fix? Or do you just quit and go find another job?
I definitely think they need to explore taking the play calling away from Nagy, because he, and even the game planning prep away from him, because he falls in love with himself. It's all about what he drew up and some kind of great scheme he came up with. He has no attention to just simplicity. Sometimes simplicity is the best. And, I mean, I'm sure, I assume you watched the game on that 4th-and-1.
Yep.
What'd they do? They faked the fly sweep and pitched it to the wide receiver / backup running back. Now, people in Chicago are griping about why they get the ball to Cordell Patterson. Irrelevant. You could have given that ball to Walter Payton. He wasn't going to get the first down. Because on the play, you're asking two receivers, I think one was a backup tight end, but they're standing up, in tight, to both get key blocks. And then you're pulling alignment around them. So you've got two guys in space to make blocks, and then you're taking alignment, and you're pulling him outside and putting him in space. So all three of those guys have to make their block to get 1 yard. That is complicated. And the two receivers missed their block, right? So you were 0-for-2 on the receivers having to make the block. So if you're a coach and you're going to call that play, you have to know that there's no way any of them are going to miss their block. Well, clearly he did not know that because they both missed it. So then you ask yourself, okay, what was the alternative? Well, whatever happened to just putting a fullback and your real running back, Montgomery, back there, going to the line of scrimmage, having your quarterback pick the best hole, the best advantage, and just running straight lead? I would venture to guess that in the history of the NFL, when you run that play, you gain more than the average of 1 yard a carry. Whereas a fly sweep pitch on 4th down probably doesn't gain a ton of yards that often because you're asking receivers to make the block. Anyway, that moment right there, that was almost as bad. Remember last year at the Rams? Tom's just fired up right now, right?
Yep.
Remember last year at the Rams, they had a 4th down late, and they ran speed option? Do you remember that?
With Trubisky,
they ran a speed option, and Trubisky, I think he pitched it late, and the guy got drilled, and this was after Trubisky had hurt his hip. Like, that kind of crap. Like, what are you doing running a speed option on 4th down? What are you doing running fake fly, sweet quick pitch to a wide receiver on 4th down? Like, It's driving me bananas. And I'm a Bears fan, so we're Bears used to. Pound it. Be tough and physical. Not all this razzle-dazzle, you know, cute stuff on fourth and one. Anyway, I'm done.
Well, the thing with the guy like...
I had to get that out. I had to get that out. Thank you very much.
I feel better.
I've been holding that in.
I tell people all the time, the money you folks save from coming on this show or calling the show in therapy alone...
No kidding. Ooh, I feel better. Thank you.
You know, a subject we've barely hit on all these years is actually Oregon State football. Obviously, a lot of fans here in town. And I know you threw the spotlight on a piece you did about their stud linebacker, Hamika Rashid, who, by the way, 14 sacks last year, now a senior.
Yeah.
So for those who aren't overly familiar, You dropped a hell of a name. What makes you think of Nick Barnett when you see this guy?
Well, this guy is probably going to be the highest drafted linebacker to come out of the state since Kiko Alonso with a second-round pick to Buffalo in 2012, and the highest drafted linebacker to come out of the state since – to come out of Oregon State since Nick Barnett was a first-round pick in 2003. The state has not produced a ton of stellar linebackers, obviously. Oregon State's had a few fourth-rounders in the last 20 years. Siegler, Slade Norris, Victor Butler. And the Ducks had Matthews was a fifth-rounder. Joe Walker was a seventh-rounder. And Dye was just a fifth-rounder. I think other than Kiko, those were their highest picks in the last 10 years or so. So anyway, but this, you know, this guy I talked to said, but based on last year, he likes Rashid as a fourth-round pick coming into this season, but, you know, learned last spring that he had put on some weight, so the scout's been very intrigued to see what he's going to do with an extra 10 pounds. He's up to 245 now at 6'4". He's a big dude. This scout likes his pass-rushing ability, wants to see him play better against the run, which is what he thinks he'll do with the added weight and strength. But he believes that he's a classic example of a guy who, you know, a mid-round pick who comes back for a senior year, you know, improves some skills, improves his body, and has a definite chance to play his way into the higher round. Maybe nothing crazy like first round, but certainly maybe into the third. Who knows, maybe the second. I did a film breakdown on him, and, man, he's pretty vicious. Like, he gets after it. He's very versatile in his pass rush moves, which is something the scouts said. One note, though, he did say, you know, one thing that jumped out, though, was that of his 14 sacks, 12 were against teams that he considered very mediocre in pass protection. Cal, which gave it the most sacks in the conference, Stanford and Arizona, and Arizona State were on the bottom third of the conference in terms of sacks allowed. And then Cal Poly, he got two against them. So he wants to see him play better against the better teams and demonstrate he's better against the run, and he thinks he definitely can move up. Probably second or third round.
Well, they just love him up there. Couple final thoughts for Mr. Fentress. Far as Oregon, last week we talked about Tyler Shuck, who you're like, he's going to be at least solid, potentially outstanding. New coordinator, some potential outstanding young receivers. You think this Moorhead offense might be a little more prone to maybe open up and throw the ball down the field more than we've seen in recent years?
Yeah, and that seems to be what people are saying and thinking based on his past. But, you know, three things have to be in play. You know, one, can you protect when you're going downfield? Two, do you have receivers that can get open downfield and make plays? And three, do you have a quarterback who's going to be able to make the reads and get the ball down there? All three of those things are up for debate. We got a brand new offensive line. We got a brand new quarterback. And you're looking at, you know, your best two receivers are not necessarily deep threat home run guys. I mean, they can get deep, Johnson and Red, but they're not guys that are just going to blow the top off the defense. So you're going to be looking for some things from some unproven guys. So we'll see how that works out. I think at the end of the day, Cristobal wants to be able to run the football first and foremost, but I do expect them to at least try to open them up more. We'll see how that works out.
And lastly, with the word that Gordon Hayward of the Celtics is on the trade block, and you know how this works, 30 fan bases, 30 people who follow that team in the media are now putting the pieces together for that trade. He's got a player option for this year, so You know, you get involved with this, and first, I know you think everybody eventually is going to go to the Bulls or Bears, but in this case, the Blazers, I mean, he's really by trade a three, so how are you going to weasel him to Portland?
Well, someone, one of the fan sites of the Blazers put out there a trade scenario, Hayward for Simons, Collins, Ariza, and Hood, and then of course people were jumping in if they would or wouldn't do it. I'm like, yes, I do that in a nanosecond. Then all of a sudden people start firing at me. You're crazy. And again, it comes down to the thing we talk about with Paul George. It's like they have to make an upgrade. Like they, you know, maybe he isn't the perfect fit, but are you going to do better? And to me, he would be the best player in that deal. Simons is redundant because he's your fourth guard. Behind Trent McCollum and Lillard. Collins hasn't really materialized. Who knows, he could be good. We don't know yet. And then Ariza and Hood are just guys. Like, you know, you replace those guys anytime you want to, really. So, yeah, I would make that deal in a heartbeat. I would try to get him to sign an extension and keep him there longer. But to me, that's enough. He's a former All-Star. He's 6'7". He can shoot it. He can score in a variety of ways. He's not great on defense, but he gives you a legit three. You go out and find anyone to put him at the four. And your top three scoring options are Dame, CJ, Gordon, Hayward, who can shoot, like I said, and Nurkic. Come on. You're a better basketball team. I mean, you backfill to replace the guys you gave up. You go into free agency, why are you fighting a backup small forward? How hard is that? Or you just keep Carmelo. You know what I'm saying? So, to me, I'd make that deal all day.
We know for a fact that 29 other fan bases are pondering this as we speak.
Well, you got to remember, though, let's be honest. What's more fun, the season or the off-season speculation?
Well,
it's sometimes I think the offseason speculation is more fun.
Well, especially I'm a Knicks fan. You've been a Bulls fan. They haven't done anything since Jordan left, and the Blazers haven't won anything since Walton. So all we have is the offseason.
That's right. All we have is the fantasies.
It's beautiful. All right. He's Mr. Fentress on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Obviously now back with the Oregonian. Fun stuff as always. Be safe. Be well. Talk next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take it easy.